Okay, I want to thank Seth and Emily for hosting us, and especially during the 3 weeks. We know that we commemorate during this period the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, which was lost, the second Beis HaMikdash, because of Sinas Chinam. So really this year and this home is a great example of Avas Chinam, where Seth opens up his home with Emily and welcomes everyone to come, to learn Torah, to connect. So halavai, Seth, that all this chesed should help build the third Beis HaMikdash, which will be built with Avas Chinam. So we're learning Torah Dalet of Rabbi Nachman. And in this Torah, as we've learned the last 2 weeks, Rabbi Nachman teaches about the idea that every sin really is a force. There are letters of Hashem's commandments, and those letters get combined in the format or in the words that spell out the sin. And those words then enter onto a person's bones. But there is a way to elevate it and to get rid of those sins, and that's through the concept of vidui, through the concept of confession. And Rabbi Nachman's chiddush, which he was criticized for, was that he felt that besides confessing to Hashem, it's good to go to your Rebbe, to a tzaddik, to a real great tzaddik, and to tell the tzaddik what it is that has been done wrong. And through that humiliation, that will cause these letters to break apart. And now they can be rearranged. And the letters can now spell out wonderful things, blessings, and good omens instead of all the sentences of sin that a person did. So last week, I shared a thought of Matl Zilber, who suggested that perhaps what Rabbi Nachman is teaching is that there is a basic problem in how can a person confess. I'm not believed about myself. I'm not believed to say that I sinned. The answer is that through confessing, I realize that who I am is somebody different from the person who sinned. The person who sinned, that was my body. But who I am is the soul. And that gives us the strength to confess. That gives us the strength to admit, because we're admitting to what somebody else did. That being has my name. It was my body, but it's not my soul. It's not my essence. My essence, my core, is something good, is something holy, is a piece of Elokus, is a piece of godliness. All right, let's continue a little bit further in this Torah of Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman's going to teach us about all sorts of different ways to connect to tzaddikim. So we'll start here. It's letter Zion within this Torah. It's here on the first page. Rabbi Nachman says, "V'zeh pirush," next to about the middle of the page. "Zeh pirush" is the meaning of the verse in Mishlei, chapter 16. Chamas melech malachei maves. The anger of the king are angels of death. Ki chamaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'shvil HaMalchus shehishpol yidei avonosav. God's anger is because of kingship, because of his sovereignty that has been lowered because of sins. But when we sin, we're not listening to God as if God's not in charge and I'm doing my sins. So that lowers the power of God's rulership. But a man of wisdom will atone for this anger. Anyone who has the quality of a Torah scholar, Bechinas Moshe, if you can connect to some level of Moshe Rabbeinu, who yechaper lo, that atones for the sin. And that's why the verse says, over al pesha l'she'eris, God forgives sins for the remnants. Someone who makes himself like remnants. In other words, someone who's very humble, like Moshe Rabbeinu, or even if I'm not as humble as Moshe, if I connect to someone who's humble like Moshe, that enables the sin to be lifted up that enables God's rulership to be lifted up. And Moshe was very humble, Moshe Namer, as it says, Vayish Moshe Anav Ma'od. And Moshe was very humble. So as we learned already 2 weeks ago, Rabbi Nachman is teaching on a basic level that reality is really just one form that we see it. There is an underlying energy to the reality. So for example, we know that there's a famous idea that sometimes there are moments in history that should be the moment of the coming of Mashiach. For example, the Zohar says that the time when Mashiach will come is the year 1648. Now, anyone who knows Jewish history knows that 1648 was a year of the opposite of the coming of Mashiach. It was the year of the Khmelnytsky massacres. Khmelnytsky was a Ukrainian peasant who had a rebellion against the Tsar, against the Russians, and he ran through Ukraine, White Russia, Poland, and slaughtered, estimates are 150,000 Jews in the span of a year. A terrible, terrible period. Gzeros tach v'tach, the decrees of 1648 and 1649. And yet the Zohar said, the Zohar came out in the 13th century, but there's a tradition that it goes back to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the 2nd century. The Zohar says that 1648 will be the time when Mashiach is going to come. So how could it be? But the answer is, there's a certain energy, very, very powerful energy. If the nation is deserving, so the energy takes on a form of a great blessing, the coming of Mashiach. It'll spell out the words of the coming of Mashiach. But if we're not deserving, we don't have the vessel to receive it in the way it should come down, so the energy comes, but it comes down in a very terrible way, unfortunately. It's such a powerful energy, it comes down in a terrible way. It comes down, unfortunately, as the terrible disasters of 1648. The Zohar says the same thing about Noah. The Zohar says that Noah was the soul of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why the flood came down for 40 days and 40 nights. And the Jewish people were at Mount Sinai with Moshe up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. That Moshe really was the soul of Noah, but the generation wasn't deserving. So instead of it coming down as Torah, as the Gemara says in Tanis, Ein Mayim Ela Torah, water is a symbol of Torah, as in the verse, Haikol Tamei L'chul HaMayim. Anyone who's thirsty, go to the water, go to study Torah. Torah itself is water. But when we are not ready to receive it as Torah, so now the letters get rearranged, the energy takes on a different cover, and now the cover becomes a great tragedy. But really, the core energy could come down in a positive way. If we can rearrange the letters, now these basic energies, these basic forces can be expressed as something positive. So whatever is going on in our life, the sins that we've performed that are on our bones, that's how the letters are spelled. The letters themselves, as we said last week, are good. It's the way they're spelled that's bad. But we can break up the letters and re-spell them. How do we break up the letters? Through great humility. Because humility means I don't take up space. I'm not this or that, this person who matters. I'm humble. I'm very submissive. So through great humility, the letters can be broken and rearranged. So that when we connect to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe is the symbol of great humility, then we merit to be able to rearrange the letters and to get rid of the sins that are on our bones, and instead, it becomes positive things. We find that many, many of our great sages were remarkably humble people. The characteristic of a sage was that he was someone very, very humble. I'll give a couple of examples. Amazing. There was a great rabbi in Lublin, the Marshal, Rav Shlomo Luria. He had yeshivos, and he wrote amazing works on halacha, Yam Shel Shlomo. The Marshal lived on top of a grocery store. And underneath him there was the man, whose name was Avram, who had this store, who lived in the store. And the Marshal lived on top. And one day the Marshal, late at night, heard that his downstairs neighbor was learning a difficult Gemara. He heard him, and he heard him explain the Gemara so clearly. He said, wow, this neighbor must be a big Talmud Chacham. So he had different Gemaras that he had a hard time with, He went down to the neighbor. He asked him to explain it, explain the Gemaras to him. The neighbor said, I don't know anything. I'm a grocer. I don't know anything. So the Maharshal said, I'm the rabbi of the town. I am demanding that you be honest with me and you share your knowledge of Torah with me. So he explained to him those Gemaras. When the Maharshal passed away, in his will, he said that the person who should succeed me is my downstairs neighbor, the ignorant grocer, has to become the Rav of Lublin. And he did. He became the Rav of Lublin. Some say that that was the Magen Avraham. But whether it was or it wasn't, but certainly there was a very great rabbi after the Maharshal who had pretended to be a simple grocer because of his enormous humility. One of the greatest Kabbalists was Rav Shalom Sharabi, the Rashash. Rav Shalom Sharabi came from Yemen to Jerusalem as a teenager, and he pretended to know nothing. And he went to the Yeshiva Mekubalim, Yeshiva Beit El, and he went to Rav Gedalia Chayun, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, I'm a poor boy, I came from Yemen to Jerusalem, I don't know anyone, I don't know anything. Maybe I could live in the Yeshiva, clean up, put the books back on the shelves, you know, dust and sweep, make sure everything is clean, and maybe I could live in the yeshiva, that way I'd survive. So Gedalia Chayun agreed, and he let him live in the yeshiva. And he lived in the yeshiva, he was supposedly this ignorant boy from Yemen who was illiterate. When Rav Gedalia Chayun would teach, Rav Shalom Sharabi would sit in the corner, and his eyes would be closed, everybody thought he'd be sleeping. There would be certain questions Rav Gedalia Chayun would have, and he'd ask these questions, and he didn't know the answers. He'd say, I can't understand it, I don't understand this, I don't understand that. So Rav Shalom Sharabi, after the classes, used to take a piece of paper, he'd write the answers, and he would slide it into the books of the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva would open up the book the next day, and he sees the answers are there. He'd say, who's giving me the answers? Who knows these answers? And no one would tell him. So he said, I want to know who's giving me the answers. So his daughter said, I'm going to find out. So she used to sit near the window, hiding behind the window, looking to see who's giving the answers. And she saw that this Yemenite boy, Rav Shalom Sharabi, was taking books, closing them, and putting them back on the shtender. So she told her father, it's the shamus. He's the one who's giving the answers. So Rav Gedalia Chayun called out Rav Shalom Sharabi. He said, you're going to marry my daughter, and you're going to be the Rosh Yeshiva after me. And that's how the Rashash was discovered. The Rashash himself was hiding who he was, but through the daughter finding the notes, that's how the Rashash was discovered. You know, it reminds me of a story I heard in Yeshiva Chevron. I learned in Yeshiva Chevron. It's a very cynical, irreverent yeshiva. So in the yeshiva, they said a story that the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Chatzkel Sarna, had three daughters. So, I'm sorry, he had a daughter, and there were three guys in the yeshiva that were competing for her affections. So one guy was Rav Bezalel Zolti, who became the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. He figured I'll compete by showing that I'm the biggest masmid. So he would sit for hours and hours, 18 hours, 20 hours, just learning in the Beis Medrash. The other guy who was competing was Rabbi Shlomo Gorin. And he was very brilliant. He said, I'm going to show that I'm the brightest guy in the yeshiva. He used to go to Rav Chatzkel Sarna, and he used to, you know, say all sorts of brilliant questions and sources. He was trying to get the daughter. But Rav Moshe Chevroni figured, I'm just going to go straight to the girl. So he started talking to her and building a relationship, and he got to marry her, and he became the Rosh Yeshiva. The other two, it didn't work. That was the story that they said in Hebron. But apparently, with Rav Shalom Sharabi, he used to hide his identity, put the notes into the books of his teacher. The daughter discovered him, and he became the Rosh Yeshiva. He was a man of tremendous humility, even though he was one of the greatest Kabbalists that we ever had. He left in his will a request that his body should be desecrated. After he dies, it should be thrown to the floor, and stones thrown on it, and it should be whipped as an atonement for the sins that he did in his life. He said, I want that the four, you know, symbolic acts of the four deaths that the court might give should be done to my body. So when they read the will, no one was willing to do it. They refused to do it. So they took him, and he was buried in Har HaZeitim. So as they were walking down Nachal Kidron to Har HaZeitim from the old city of Yerushalayim, a group of Arabs came, and they started throwing stones and screaming at them, and they were in such danger, they dropped the body, and the stones hit the body, and everybody ran away. Then the Arabs left. They saw, you know, whatever the tzaddik wanted, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already arranged that that should happen. That was Avshalom Sarabi. He was a man of enormous, enormous humility. And this humility that characterized Avshalom Sarabi, that comes really from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Talmud Chacham. Moshe Rabbeinu is the most humble of all men, Anav Mikol Adam. And so through the humility, a person connects to tzaddikim. Rabbi Nachman is teaching us in this Torah that if we want to connect to tzaddikim, we have to first understand what tzaddikim are all about. What tzaddikim are all about is that they continue the ways of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is very humble. And we connect to tzaddikim when we become very humble. And when we are very humble and we connect to tzaddikim, so a humble being already is not limited into these letters and these words. And the words can be rearranged. Once the words can be rearranged, the sin can be expiated off of the bones, and now a person can rearrange the letters and they can become blessings. We find that there's a famous story about the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov once had the privilege of hosting Reb Zev Kitzis for Rosh Hashanah. He told Reb Zev Kitzis, I want you to blow shofar for me on Rosh Hashanah, but to blow shofar you need to prepare with all the meditations that the Kabbalists have, the Kavanos, all the meditations, what each blast is supposed to be about. So Reb Zev Kitzis studied for several weeks on all the meditations that the Mekubalim have, and he took notes. Then came Rosh Hashanah, and he couldn't find his notes. So he didn't, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to blow shofar, I have to have the meditations, I don't have any of the notes, I don't have any of the meditations. It was time to blow shofar. So he was sobbing and he was crying. He felt terrible. He's letting down his teacher, the Baal Shem Tov. He's not having the meditations he's supposed to have. He's a person filled with sins and he doesn't even have the right thoughts he's supposed to have. He's blowing shofar. And after he blew, the Baal Shem Tov told him that all the different meditations are keys to open up a heichal, a palace in heaven. But there's a master key. The master key that opens up all the locks is the verse, Leiv Nizbar V'Nidke Elokim Lo Sizbeh. A heart that's broken, that's shattered, that's lowly, God will never push it away. When you were brokenhearted and humble, that opened up all the gates. That was like all the kavanas. Because that's the level of tzaddikim. Tzaddikim are very humble people. Rabbi Nachman says, the verse says, God has rage, but the rage of God is expiated, is removed by a man of wisdom. What that means is that a Talmud Chacham can remove God's disappointment. That is someone who's connected to Moshe Rabbeinu. Zeo, that's why it says, over Al Pesha, God removes sin, the She'eris, to the one who makes himself just a remnant. Nimtza, so it emerges. Kishaba lifnei Talmud Chacham, when someone comes before a Torah scholar, Umotzi kol tzirufa lifnei haTalmud Chacham, and he expresses all of the words in front of the Talmud Chacham. VaTalmud Chacham b'chinas Moshe, shemesim atzma kishirayim. The Talmud Chacham is like Moshe Rabbeinu; he's very humble, as it says, "Vayish Moshe of Maod al yidei zednikri yish Chacham." That's what makes him wise. Shekasev, because the verse says in Iov, "Hachachma me'ayin timatze," wisdom comes from feeling that one is nothing. In this way, the Talmud Chacham can create atonement. As it says, a wise man will wipe away the sin. That's why, when Moshe was crying for the worst sin, the sin of the golden calf, Moshe said, "In tisa chatasa, if you wipe away their sins, good. V'im ayin, but if not, machenina, erase me." In other words, kizemin animna shelo yavol adam is a godless kishomea shemesapim shvachol. If a person is told all of his great things, you're this, you're that, he becomes a little bit arrogant. Certainly, if God will praise a person, certainly he'll become somewhat arrogant. So how do you overcome that? To hear compliments and not let it get to you. The way to do it is to feel that I'm a nothing, I don't have any feelings. The chamer yuso, and the physicality is nothing. Azai yachal adam, then a person is able, l'shmoa shivcho, to hear his praises, v'lo yavalo shum godless, and not to feel any arrogance at all. K'mo Moshe Rabbeinu, that's Moshe. He saw it in the Torah, it says, Hashem speaks to Moshe, Hashem told Moshe. Every day Jews learn Torah about how great Moshe is. Moshe can tell them how great he is. And Moshe doesn't feel anything, as it says, v'yish Moshe on of ma'od, through great humility. So that's what Moshe says, im ayin. In other words, if you don't erase their sin, that means that I'm not so humble. I can't wipe away their sins. So if I'm not so humble, mecheni na misifrecha, erase all the good things you say about me in your book. Because if I'm not so humble, I can't tolerate hearing all those good things about those things. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Because I have to be over al pesha l'sheiris. God overlooks sin to those who are very lowly. So Rabbi Nachman, number one, tells us that we should connect to the Torah scholars, and the way to connect to the tzaddikim is to learn from their humility. And when we learn from their humility, we can go back to the letters that have spelled out the sin, and we break those letters, and those letters can now be rearranged to spell something positive. If we try to connect this to what we learned last week, we can say as follows. Who sinned? The person who sins is the body. It's the externals of a person who sins. The inside of every Jew, the deep neshama of every Jew, is never willing to sin. The deep neshama, the point of the Jew that's connected to God, that point is not accepting any sin. That point only wants to do mitzvos, it only wants to do merits, it only wants to be connected to God. So when we humble ourselves and we get rid of the ego and the arrogance and the pride and we're just completely humble in front of God, that part that's completely humble, that never sinned. That part is connected to God. That part never sinned. And from there, a person can rebuild, a person can reconstruct who he is. I heard a beautiful thought. I've mentioned it before from my teacher of Moshe Wolfson. The Gemara says in Masechet Makos that Rava said, "Kama tipshoi hani inchi." He thinks that people are foolish to come up if they sefer Torah. They get up to honor the sefer Torah. The lo kama b'fnei Talmud Chacham. But when they see a Torah scholar, they don't get up to give him honor. And Rava's arguing that the Torah scholar has greater power than the Torah scroll. Why? In the Torah scroll it says, V'hayam bin hakosa rasha, if a person commits a sin deliberately, even after he was warned and the witnesses told him, this is what's wrong, this is why you can't do it, you're going to get lashes if you do it. He said, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway, to beat me up, I don't mind. If a person commits a sin, the Torah says, Arbaim yakenu. The courts give him 40 lashes, 40 blows. And yet the rabbis come, and through interpretation and drushos, they say, no, it's not 40 blows. It's really 39 blows. That's amazing. The Torah says 40, and the rabbis show that it really means 39. So if you stand for the Torah, certainly stand for the rabbis. What's the connection? There are many lessons where the rabbis show us meanings of verses beyond the meaning of the verse. But there's something very powerful here. According to the Kabbalah, there are four universes. Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. And they come from the four letters of God's name, Yud, He, Vav, and He. Yud created Atzilus, He, Bria, Vav, Yetzira, and the final He, Asiya. Every universe has 10 levels, because the Gemara tells us in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that God made the world with 10 utterances, with 10 commands. Ba'asara ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 ma'amaros. If you go to Bereishis chapter 1, and you look at every time it says Vayomer Elokim, and God said, there are 10 things that Vayomer Elokim, God said, and then they were. God said, let there be light, and there was light. God said, let there be a heavens, there was a heaven. Every world has 10 levels. So if there are 4 universes, 4 worlds, and every world has 10 levels, that means there's a total of 40 levels. That's why the Torah was given over 40 days and 40 nights. That's why the Gemara says in Nidah that a child is formed over 40 days and 40 nights. And when a person commits a sin deliberately, even after being warned, and they show me the verse, and I say, I don't care, and the witnesses say, you're going to be punished, and I say, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway, I seemingly am desecrating, making impure, bringing sin into every single one of those days, into every single one of those levels. So it seems that I deserve 40 lashes. But come the sages, this is the power of the sages, they say, no, no, it's not so. Deep, deep down, even the Jew who says, I want to sin, deep down he has a voice saying, I don't want to sin. Deep down there's a point of him that says, I don't agree. Call it the highest point of the highest world. He doesn't want to agree. So it can't be that it's 40 lashes. It's only 39. And we find so many times throughout halacha, this dynamic of 40, no, it's really 39. For example, after Tisha B'Av, we have the holiday of Tu B'Av. So why do we celebrate Tu B'Av? The Gemara gives 6 reasons. One of the reasons that the Gemara gives, Shebo Kalu Meisei Midbar. Those who were dying in the desert stopped dying on the 15th of Av. So what does that mean? The spies went to Israel for 40 days. When they come back and they say a negative report and everybody cries, God says, now the Jews are going to have 40 years of dying in the desert. So how are they all going to die? So it all was a matter of ages. Those who were above the age of 20 at the time of the spies' report, so they were the ones who were going to die. So those who were 60, the next year on Tisha B'Av, they dug graves, they laid down in the graves, and they died. The next year, those who were 60 again dug graves, and they died. And every year, those who were 60 years old died in the graves. So the Gemara says, the 15th of Av was when they stopped dying. That year, they went and they dug on the 9th of Av, nobody died. They figured maybe we're off with the calendar. Maybe really Rosh Chodesh was a different day. Maybe what we think is the 9th of Av is really the 8th of Av. They did it again the next day, till the 15th of Av when the moon was full. They knew this is the middle of the month. Can't be that we're off anymore. And nobody died. So they knew the decree was over. So Tosfos asks, I don't understand. These people, were they 20 years old at the time that the spies came back? If they were 20 years old, they were part of the decree. They should have died. If they were under 20 when the spies came back, so why did they think that they were going to die? So Tosa says, no, they were 20 years old. This was a generation that should have died. But when it came to the 40th year, God forgave. The 40th year, God said, no, now only 39 years will be punished. Not the 40th year. We all know that when you go to a mikvah, the mikvah creates purity. The mikvah has a certain measure of water called a sa'a of water. It's about 1.5 gallons. How many sa'a of pure water are needed to make a kosher mikvah? 40 sa'a. Because when you get to the 40th point, then already the inner neshama comes out, and then already there's purity. How many days did the water come down for the flood? 40 days and 40 nights. Because when we got to the 40th point, the inner point came out, and at that point already there's purity. And that's what Rabbi Nachman is saying, that deep down, the innermost point is where I don't exist anymore. There's no me, there's no yeshus, there's just ayin, there's just nothingness. At that innermost point, there has to be purity. And from there, everything else can be rearranged. Everything else can be fixed and turned into good. Rav Nachman is going to go on to teach that Rav Chaim Vital teaches that there are 4 elements that make up the physical world: water, fire, air, and earth. And Rav Chaim Vital teaches that not only are there these 4 elements in the physical world for physical items, But these four elements find expression in human character. So, for example, the Gra writes in Mishlei that it's so strange that we have this desire to sit around and waste time. Why is there a Yetzirah to waste time, to talk? What are we accomplishing? Is it renewing us? Physically, it doesn't do anything for us. And yet, we have this desire to waste time. It comes from the idea that within the human character, there is an air element. Air is empty. So there is a desire within the character of a person to be empty, to waste time. Then there is the element of earth. Earth doesn't move. There's a desire within human beings to not move, not do anything, not accomplish, to procrastinate, be lazy, to be depressed, to sit and do nothing, to sleep all day. That's the earth desire within a person. Then there's the water desire within a person. Water creates pleasures, and people have desires for all sorts of physical pleasures. And finally, there's the fire element. And within a person, there's a desire for anger, for arrogance. These are expressions of the fire of the personality. So there are all sorts of vices that are within a person. And Rabbi Nachman's going to suggest that going to a Talmud Chacham can help us overcome all of these vices. He's going to say that there are three ways you can connect to a Talmud Chacham. You can see the face of the Talmud Chacham, you can give charity that the Talmud Chacham will distribute, or you can talk and connect and bond with the Talmud Chacham, vidui dvarim lifnei Talmud Chacham. And in all of these ways, a person can release and get out of all of these challenges of these personality traits. And perhaps what Rabbi Nachman means in that is the same idea that we're saying. That the physical world is made up of fours. There are four universes, there are four letters of God's name, there are four basic elements. There were four empires that the Jewish people were under. The Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, now we're under the Romans. That all comes from being under the Egyptians when we were supposed to be there for 400 years. All of this comes from the fact that there are four elements. All the sins, all the physicality, all the bad character traits, they all come from the four elements and how those elements express themselves within a person. But the way to overcome all of that is to connect to the Talmud Chacham. How do we connect to a tzaddik? By being like a tzaddik. The tzaddik is very humble. So if we become very humble, and we humble ourselves, that enables us to overcome all of these vices and to remake ourselves, to make something new. The Ari teaches that there are four parts to the human body. Basar, flesh, gidin, sinews, or skin, and atzamos, and bones. Why are there four parts to the human body? Because there are four elements. Why are there four elements? Because there are four letters of God's name. There are four universes. There are four parts to the human body, to the physical body. But then there is a fifth part. There's the etzem luz. There's the luz bone. The Gemara says in Brachos that a human body that has engaged in sin eventually decomposes in the earth. We become dust and worms. The only part that's left is the luz bone. And the luz bone is what God will use to create Tchiyas HaMesim, the revival of the dead. What is Rabbi Nachman teaching us? That when we commit sins, we're taking the letters of the verses of sin and we're writing them on our bones. It's so deep, it's so penetrating. It gets all the way onto our bones. But there's something deeper than the bones. What's deeper than the bones is the luz bone. That's deeper than the four elements. What's deeper than the four elements is the point that's connected to God, of complete humility and submission and nothingness and just being attached to God. When we get to there, out of that comes Tchiyas HaMesim. Out of that comes a revival of the dead. Out of that comes a renewal. A person becomes an entirely new person. We find in next week's Parsha, Moshe is about to pass away. And what does Moshe do? What's his last command that he gives? He tells the Jews to go fight the Midianim, v'hikisem osam.
and to smite them. And what are they? Who are they supposed to kill there? They're supposed to kill Bilam. Bilam is from the word bolea, to absorb. He tries to absorb us. He tries to swallow us. But how do we defeat him? How do we defeat the sins that try to absorb us? We go and we connect to a Moshe Rabbeinu. We connect to a tzaddik. And the tzaddik sends us out with great humility. And with that humility of meisim atzmo kishirayim, making myself like nothing, we can now rearrange all the letters, and now everything can be turned to good. This perhaps is the whole idea of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the 40th day. We said that the 40th corresponds to getting to that point within me that's still pure. How is Yom Kippur the 40th day? Because Moshe went up to get the second set of luchos on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and he spent 40 days. He came down on Yom Kippur. So think about the dynamic. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with the first set of luchos, and yesterday on Shavuos Tammuz, he broke them because of the sin of the golden calf. In other words, there was a set of letters, there was a set of words, but they all became defiled because of the sin of the golden calf. So Moshe Rabbeinu broke those words. And then he goes back up onto the mountain for 40 days, and he comes down on Yom Kippur. The 40th day is Yom Kippur. On that day, he comes down with a new set of letters, with a second set of tablets, with a rearrangement of all the letters, that through connecting to this inner humility from the point of Ayin, at that point they can get to a level where everything can be completely rearranged, and we can now respell it all for the good. The Zohar says that there, the same way there are four empires, the Zohar says there were four rivers that came out of Gan Eden. But above all those rivers is Gan Eden itself. So there are four empires, there are all sorts of difficulties. There are four sides around the Mishkan. But the center of it all, besides all these flags, is the Mishkan itself. It's to connect to the Moshe Rabbeinu, to connect to the Tzaddikim, to connect to the people who are very, very humble, by us being humble. That's the way to connect to Tzaddikim. And Rabbi Nachman, he has this, you know, wild idea of actually, you know, unburdening to the Tzaddik and talking to the Tzaddik and, you know, embarrassing myself in front of the Tzaddik. But through that, I realize that I'm a nothing. I'm a nobody. I have nothing to be arrogant about. And in that humility, through that humility, now these letters can be rearranged. All the four elements can be rearranged. We can take out what's been absorbed, and we can, with the fire, we can purify it. We know the Gemara says that when a person is embarrassed, it's like going through fire. And that his face loses all of its color, and he becomes white. So, in other words, he goes through a tchias hameisim. So when I go and I choose to embarrass myself, by going to my tzaddik, and humbling myself, and telling my tzaddik, listen, I'm doing this and this wrong, I'm sorry about it, how can I fix it? So I'm draining the color from my face, and I'm creating my own tchias hameisim. I'm becoming a new person. And as this new person, now all the letters that have been spelled on my bones with my sins can be rearranged. And can be rearranged for good. Yeah, Rav Yosef.
At the risk of embarrassing myself.
No, don't embarrass yourself.
Going back to 40, so why is Malchus 39?
Because the inner point never sinned. So a person thinks he sinned fully, but the inner point of the Jew doesn't sin. And that inner point is connected to the place where I'm very, very humble, where I'm very, very humble, and I'm in God's hands, and He's controlling everything. That's the place of no sin. When a person has the great humility of Lev Nishbar V'Nidke Elokim Lo Sivze, God won't push that away. The Baal Shem Tov points out that the verse says in Tehillim, Kamayim Panim El Panim, like a reflection in water, Kein Lev Adam Ba'Adam. That's how a person's heart is to someone else's heart. So the Baal Shem Tov said that's true about God too. If I want to see my reflection in the water, if I stand up tall, there'll be a distorted reflection. But if I crouch and I look closely, then the same way I am, that's what I'll see back from me in the water. If I want to be close to God, I need to crouch myself down. I need to humble myself. I need to limit myself. And when I limit myself, He will limit Himself. And then I merit to connect to Him. That's the theme of this Torah of Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman's teaching us to connect to tzaddikim. And according to Rabbi Nachman, how do we connect to tzaddikim? We connect to them by being like them. They are extremely humble people, all about serving God without an ego. When we humble ourselves and we connect to them, then we are with them, and then all of the sins can be rearranged. The letters, the energies can take on a new form. They can take on a form of blessing. You know, Shivasar B'Tammuz is the 40th day after the receipt of the Torah. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to come down on the 40th day. That's the day he came down, the Shivasar B'Tammuz. And Tisha B'Av is the 40th day after the spies went out. They came back on the 9th of Av, on the 40th day. And we just got through learning that the 40th really is never so bad. It's 39 that are bad. 39 blows, but the 40th is okay. So that means that even though it's the 17th of Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and it's the time of Bein HaMitzarim, it's difficult times, but in the neshama, in the deepest parts of the soul, in the level of great humility of Ayin, there it's all holy. The Jews never wanted to sin. The Beis HaMikdash is still standing deep within the Jewish neshamos. And hopefully we'll merit to see the Beis HaMikdash this year rebuilt speedily in our time.
Amen.
Thank you.